Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Okay, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It has been... Okay. All right. It has really been snowing wildly and crazy in the city of Chicago. I mean, this morning it was coming down. I mean, we've never seen this much snow in quite a while because basically wintertime in the city of Chicago has been really, really mild. In some cases, if you've been listening to the show, in some cases, it was like springtime. But now winter has returned, and it has returned with a vengeance. And a lot of people got caught off guard by this because we were so used to the nice mild weather that we were having for, maybe a month or over a month, you know, in the middle of winter, mild weather. But now it's winter. And it's like I've been saying on the radio, on this show, we were being set up for the kill when we were getting all that nice weather. And the kill has shown up. I mean, we had a blizzard this morning, a record cold and blizzard. And it's still not over from what I'm hearing from weather forecasters. It has really been something here. And it's pretty cool now. They said the lake effect snow has gone away for a while, but it will return. And so it is winter in the city of Chicago, folks. It's no more springtime and winter. Winter is totally winter here. And it's cold. And very, very cold. And blowing snow, blizzard snow, snowstorm, whatever you want to call it. We had it this morning and during the afternoon. It is 6:03 straight up Chicago time, straight up 6:03 p.m. In the city of Chicago. And through daylight savings time, it is still bright outside. In some cases, I can see the sun beaming down on all of this snow. And it's a good thing that it's not blistering cold, because if it was blistering cold out here, the snow would not be melting. The snow is melting now. I mean, you got the city crews out here moving it, and people are shoveling their sidewalks, their steps, and all that kind of thing. And, you know, but it's here. Winter is finally arrived in the city of Chicago in the middle of March, which is still winter. Summer, not summer, but spring begins on March 20th. That's about that's less than a week away. You know, and we're having all of this winter weather. Some call it a winter blast. Anyway, we're not the only one getting it. New York is getting, I think, Philadelphia, Boston, some of those states over there on the East Coast, and more states around Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio. Some of these kinds of states are feeling it also. It could be the last blast of winter, or the last gasp of winter. It could be. Then who knows? I mean, this could go all the way through April. You never know. I mean, the weather in the city of Chicago and around the world is just fickle. It's just fickle. Anyway, all right, let me try this again. You're welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me all over the place. We have an interesting guest today. I think we call him Rocco Romanella. Okay, Romanella. Rocco Romanella. Hope I got that name right. All right, on the George Wilder Jr. Show, we got commentary, political commentary. We got all of that kind of stuff. And we're going to be talking about whatever, you know, comes to mind, as always. 347-857-1762. We're on Block Talk Radio. And I'm in my studio on the north side of Chicago. The window is right in front of me. I'm looking out on the avenue. And but most people cannot look in and see me doing the show, which is great. I don't want somebody throwing a snowball at the window or anything like that. But anyway, it's beautiful. I mean, it's a gorgeous winter day, I think it is. And we've had snow for about 2 or 3 days now. And it's unusual because, like I said, we've gotten so used to the mild weather during these winter months that when winter actually appears, it's kind of weird. And because everybody is scrambling to be bundled up and everything like that, not to freeze their asses off, and you know, snow covered cars, people sliding in and sliding out, accidents, you know, and stuff like that. And it's just typical winter. You know, when this stuff is coming in the middle of springtime, then we're going to complain again, right? But I don't think we should be doing too much complaining, because we have been spoiled in the city of Chicago, folks, in terms of weather. We have been totally spoiled. And it's just not right for winter to actually show up during the winter for some reason, if that makes any sense. All right. We have author Rocco Romanella. I can't pronounce his name. Okay, he'll be here and do it himself. All righty. Okay, we've just got through talking about the weather. Summer's coming. School is going to be out. Well, yeah, you know, Chicago schools are just mucked up. They are all the way screwed up. And I'm so glad that my kids... Summer is coming, and you know, they will be out of school. Chicago schools, public schools, you know, public schools in general, with this new regime in Washington, D.C., and we have this Betty DeVos. She's educational secretary. She don't know jack about secretary. I'm pretty sure she's learning on the job. You know, when these people get these high in jobs, and they don't know anything about them, they have to learn on the job. They have to count on people around them who know something about what they're doing, so these people can learn. I mean, Donald Trump is the same way. He knows nothing about being president. I'm pretty sure he's learned a lot since his 1 or 2 months in office. he's learned a lot. He realizes he cannot be king and emperor, you know, he has to follow the Constitution, whether he likes it or not. And apparently he doesn't like it. A lot of Republicans, they don't like the Constitution. They just use it for toilet paper. And I said this before, I don't know how so many people who are in government just break the laws of the Constitution and get away with it. This is really, this is really mind-boggling to me, you know. And they're talking about this healthcare thing, which is a debacle. You know, 24 million people will be cut off as time goes on. I think around 2026, they're saying 14 million people would be slashed from the rolls in 2018. But the Trump administration, they're saying that that's not true. And every time the Trump administration is saying something that's not credible, that's coming from a credible source, you're saying all these people on drugs? How do they know what's not true? I mean, they're just saying the only reason why they're saying these numbers are not true coming from the Congressional Budget Office is because the numbers are not in their favor. The numbers are not anything that's not in Trump's favor. It's rigged or it's bogus or it's not true if it's not in his favor. Trump knows nothing about crunching numbers when it comes to the budget. He knows nothing. And to say that people who have been doing this for many years that they don't know anything, he's crazy. And anyway, why would anybody care what the Trump administration believe or doesn't believe? Because this man is a total, I mean, an absolute pathological liar. I don't believe, and I don't think anybody else should believe anything that comes out of their mouths. Kelly Conway, she could never, ever come on this show. Not with the lies she tells. Not with the spin that goes around and around in her head. How can anybody believe anything that is said in that White House? These people, this is how Trump became president, being a con artist and lying. And totally lying. A lot of people don't realize the cuts that Trump is doing, all of these cuts from all of these agencies, screwing the poor, screwing the middle class. He's trying to find money to support building of a wall. You've heard about that. We all have heard about that. He's trying to cutting a budget, hurting people all over the place, so he can come up with enough money to build that damn wall, which is ridiculous. So he's going to come up with a lot of money, billions of dollars, building a wall, cutting services, cutting this, taking away money from the Great Lakes, taking away money from that's keeping us actually safe in America. Finding taxpayer dollars, charging us everything, throwing us off these Medicaid and Medicare rolls, so he can take that money and money from other programs that he's slashing, take all of that money and put it into a fund to build a wall. He doesn't care. He wants to get that wall built. I actually think that the wall will not be built because too many people are going to be, you know, upended by this. And even Congress, Republicans, some of these guys don't even support this healthcare bill. And I said this, and I said it yesterday, the healthcare bill that we're talking about today is nothing but a distraction. Trump loves, it's a distraction, it's a deflection. It's keeping us from talking about his influence with Russia. It's keeping us from talking about the investigations into Russia. It's keeping us from talking about the big lie, the one he told that we all know of, that Obama wiretapping one of his Trump towers, his Trump tower, with no proof. This is just smear and deflect. That's all it is. He's deflecting away from everything. And if he has anybody in his administration who even looks at him thinking about investigating him, he's going to fire him. He's going to get rid of him. He doesn't want to be investigated. He doesn't want us talking about this investigation. That's why he's changing the narrative so often. After healthcare, there's going to be something else we're going to be talking about and not talking about the investigations, the gropings, the lawsuits. There are no lawsuits. I don't think there's many lawsuits out there against Trump because he and his goons are out there paying these people off. So he's settling out of court quietly. That's why we don't hear any more about these lawsuits or court dates that he supposedly has. I mean, he settles out of court, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's no law against it. So we'll never see Trump in court. But I think if Obama sued him, I think for defamation, I think we would see Trump in court. But I don't think Obama's going to sue him. I'm pretty sure a lot of people in Obama's circle are saying, man, why don't you sue this guy? However, Obama he's a nice guy. He probably won't do it. I mean, he's trying to stay above the fray. And sometimes staying above the fray actually don't get you anywhere. It's just, I just think he should just sue the guy. But, you know, that's just me. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Whoopi Goldberg is suing over fake news story. I don't know. I don't think she needs the money. Do you? But yeah, she is suing over a fake news story. We will talk about that a little later on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I am so glad to be on the air today. Sometimes put it this way. I actually prepare to get on the show, to be on the show just about every day. Then sometimes I am on the show, but I'm not prepared. You know, maybe you can tell when I'm prepared, when I'm not prepared, you know. So I'm not prepared today. I'm this show is just, and I've been thinking about it all day. I hung around all day just to get on the air, but sometimes I'll do that and not be fully prepared to get on the show. But anyway, I just love getting on the show. I just love telling you what I know and you tell me what you know. It's great. I just post a post on Facebook saying that I'm cutting the cord from cable. I'm cutting the cord from DirecTV. Matter of fact, I cut cable out a long time ago. And now I'm getting ready to cut loose DirecTV. I mean, this is just ridiculous. The prices that you pay for so many channels that you don't even watch. And every time I get a bill, it's higher than the one before. So, and you know, I'm going to get out of that. So I'm getting out of that. That's not going to happen. And we'll see where that goes. So if you're cutting your cable bill or you have cut it, you know, I don't mind watching over the air television. I think it's, I don't do a lot of, I'm not a great television watcher anyway, period. I'm more of a movie man. I like watching movies. I mean, I just wish my son was into that, you know, movie watching. I love movies. I mean, I don't need cable. I really don't. And a lot of the shows stink anyway. That's my opinion. And I'm a movie man. I have two or 300 movies right here in my studio. And if I want to watch something, I'll watch a movie. So every now and then I'll turn on the news because I have to listen to the news to find out what's going on so I can present some of that on this show. Try to inform you in case you missed it, right? Then sometimes I just, you know, miss everything. Then I get on the show and I go, oh, I don't know what to talk about. All right, Denver, come on over here, sit down so we can chat. You'll be my co-host for the day. And And it's fun. It's always fun. And it's always fun. And I love the guests that appear on the show. I have a slew of guests that's going to be appearing throughout the month. Yeah. And then I have to, we have to do some booking for next month. Yeah. And come August, it'll be a third anniversary of this show being on the air. And I owe it all to you because I couldn't do it without you. Believe me, I couldn't do it without you. I mean, you do a show like this, you just have to know somebody's out there listening and supporting you. And that means a lot to anybody who's trying to get out there and get out here and make a name for themselves. Support. You need that support from family, friends, even total strangers. Somebody just saying, "Hey, wow, you're doing a great job. That's wonderful. I'm a fan." And that's wonderful. It keeps you out here doing it. Just like I try to motivate people to do better. People try to motivate me to hang in there and do better, no matter what the people out here might say, the nasty things, the rotten things, the low down things. You have to stay motivated. You have to stay motivated. Get those. I was talking to Lisa Cherry Beaumont yesterday, and she was right. And she talked about getting those negative voices out of your head, you know, turning off and getting away from those negative people who do not mean you any harm. Stay away from the negative people. Sometimes when negative people see that you're staying away from them, they will try to get into your face. They will try to get into your business because they see that you don't want anything to do with them. And in some cases, that can be a dangerous confrontation, you know. So, well, I wouldn't talk about anything that I didn't know about, but stay positive, be positive, and just stay away from the rotten, stupid, dumb people who are out here who are trying to take you down. They are trying to take you down. And most of the time, these people who are trying to take you down, they are not about anything themselves. That's why they're trying to take you down. They don't want to see you prosper. They don't want to see you make it in your life. They don't want to see you successful. They don't want to see you with good friends. They don't want to see any of that because they do not have any of that. So there's people out there that's doing this to good people. And I know it. I know it because it has happened to me. But, you know, I guess I was strong enough to repel that. But a lot of people aren't strong enough to repel those kinds of things, those kinds of onslaughts, because I've known people who, you know, given in to thuggish people, people who wanted to see them ruin their lives. You've got people out there, people in your family. They don't want to see you go anyplace. They don't want to see you make anything of yourself. If they see you reading a book or something, they might kick you out of the house. But even if they do kick you out of the house, that may be a good thing, because if they kick you out of the house, then you'll be able to read them books day and night, night and day, wherever you wind up. And books, I try to tell my son and try to tell other people, books make you smart. They do. Books make you very, very smart. And I love to read. I've got a ton of books on my Kindle. Wow. I mean, like when I say a ton, actually I have more than a ton, you know. It is really filled up. It is really filled up. I'm not going to say that my Kindle is filled to the rim with great books. I'm just going to say it's filled to the rim with books, even my own books. I have my own books on Kindle and stories. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's 6:23 p.m. in the city of Chicago. I hope it's wonderful and great. And the weather is beautiful wherever you are in the world. And Lisa, Cherry Beaumont called me yesterday from Spain. Wow. From all the way from Spain, folks. Now, if this radio show do not get out there, somebody's lying. I mean, I didn't I wasn't so excited when she first told me that she called in from Spain. It just now hit me that she called from Spain. Oh, I've had people call me from Australia, call the show from Australia, London, Germany, you know, so other places outside of the U.S. And it is fun. I mean, if you hear all those great accents and the language, it's just great. The only language I can speak is English. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, I wasn't privy to a lot of the languages. We did have Spanish and French when I was in high school, but somehow that never somehow it never prevailed. But anyway, it was great to talk to her from Spain, all the way from Spain. Wow. I don't know. I think that's the first caller I've ever had from Spain. And we had just a lovely conversation yesterday, folks. I hope you tune in and listen to that. If not, you can always podcast the show. It's still out there. And a matter of fact, I have to send her a link to the show. I told her that before she got off. But anyway, she was from Spain, and I'm excited about that because I know that this show has a long, long reach. And that is so, so, so beautiful, so wonderful. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We have been talking about, not actually Spain. All right, it's beautiful in the city of Chicago. After this great snowfall, folks, it seems like if the sun is coming out, it is so beautiful, and the sun is coming out, and people are taking their head scarves off, taking their skull caps off, and they're just enjoying the wonderful weather. Wonderful winter wonderland in the city of Chicago. Wow, that's great. Thanks for listening. If you're going to listen to a radio show, especially an internet radio show, make sure you listen to only my show, you know, so because it's one of the best shows out there. It's one of the finest shows in the city of Chicago and around the world. Yeah, the George Wilder Jr. Show. Folks, we're going to be right back. We're going to take a little bit of musical break, and then we're going to go to the we're going to go to the phones as soon as we come back. It'll be about a minute. All right, here we go. All right, I think that was less than a minute, but we're back anyway. I'm kind of giddy, folks, about being on the air, and always is. We're on 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday, starting at 6 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. Longer if warranted, if warranted. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I think we have a caller on the line. Let's go. Okay, you're on the Hey, how's it going, Rocco?
Yes, George. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thanks for doing the show. Thanks for coming aboard. Okay, tell my audience a little bit about yourself and, you know, and things like that, and if you have a book.
Well, George, well, number one, thanks for inviting me. I'm calling from Jersey, so that's sort of international. That's two international in a row, right? You had England.
Yeah.
And you got New Jersey, so... Yeah, that's about as international as I'm going to get for now. So yes,
that's fine, man. That's okay. Yeah.
And I recently authored a book called "Tighten the Lug Nuts," And it's about being a balanced leader, and more importantly, about being a good person that translates into great leadership skills. And so
you
as
know
you
what?
Read the book, I tell, go ahead, sir.
You know what, Rocky, Rocco, I like that title. It's just it's just one of those titles that you that makes you want to say, hey, wow, I got to read this book. You know,
yes,
so
tighten
go right
the
ahead.
Nuts. yeah, tighten the lug nuts. And there's a story in there about tightening your lug nuts. And so I'll leave it a little
wow.
bit so people will read the book. But it's really I wrote the book in tribute to just a wonderful family and grateful respect for an excellent career. I worked for UPS for 36 years, and then upon my retirement from UPS, I took on a role as a CEO and a board member at another company, and then we sold that. And now I've been doing some consulting, management training, some speaking, but more importantly, got a chance to write a book. In that book, I get a chance to say thank you to two very important people. My dad, who has since passed away, but was just a great influence in my life growing up. And of course, my wife, who has just been such a great partner and a person that I've really leaned on, who's been so supportive and helped me throughout my career. And many of the, stories I tell in the book, center around Debbie and the many wonderful things that she's helped me with as we've grown our wonderful family, as well as just had a wonderful career. So it's just a great, I didn't think, to tell you the truth, it was scary to start writing a book, George. I mean, you sit down and you stare at a piece of paper and you wonder,
yeah.
Do I have enough here that people would like or write read? But I think it came out well, and I hope you
yeah.
and your audience enjoys reading it.
Yeah, I know about writing. I do the same thing. Sometimes I'll sit down at the computer and I'm staring at a blank page. Now, what am I going to do? You know, and then, like you just said, you wonder if you have enough to actually fill a book, you know, and you have to, you wonder about that. But I think if you want to really fill a book, you really have to outline it, you know, outline each chapter and stuff like that and go at it, you know. So, but now you, another question. Now you are a motivational speaker. What made you want to be a motivational speaker?
It's interesting. I never really started out or intended to do that. Actually, if you knew me in high school, I would be the last person you would think would be a motivational speaker or a speaker in general. It's something I always had to work on. In fact, in grammar school, I always joked that, when they were giving out parts to the Christmas play, I just wanted to be the baby Jesus. Just wrap me in swaddling clothes and let me lay in the manger. I don't have to say a word, you know. But but as you grow in your career and you take on new additional responsibilities, you learn that that's part of what you need to do. You have to be a good, I think a world-class leader has to be a world-class communicator. And that's such an important
exactly.
skill of a leader. And so I originally went to college to be a high school history teacher and a baseball coach. And through my career, I've always believed that if you take that approach of teaching and educating and trying to get the light bulbs to go off over people's heads, that they understand the vision and the strategy, you'd really be a
yeah.
very good leader. And so I believe that
yeah.
this speaking and motivational speaking is sort of just an outgrowth of the desire to be a teacher, desire to be an educator, desire to be someone who can connect with the audience. So that's really how I moved
yeah.
into it. So,
yeah, and you are probably a person who have been motivated by someone else during your lifetime, and you want to take that motivation and try to encourage other people to be better people, to live better lives, and to be positive about what's going on in their lives and try to steer away from the negativity.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, and I think all of us, are mm-hmm. leaders in some way, shape, or form. I think sometimes people get caught up in the title of what a leader is, CEO or manager or supervisor, but we're all leaders in our own way as a parent,
exactly.
teachers. I mean,
yeah.
you can't get
yeah.
better leadership than teachers. And so all of us have that,
yeah.
have a responsibility in some way, shape or form in terms of leadership. And so as I wrote this book, I drew upon those experiences. And to your point, the people that I've been touched with and been mentored by, I was very fortunate. I had an opportunity to sit with legendary coach John Wooden for about 4 hours. and talked to him about leadership. And what a great experience, and what a genuine, humble individual who, you know, is sitting there and he's giving you all these pearls of wisdom, but in such a honest and relaxed way. And I always thought that, wow, that's what leadership's all about, the ability to communicate, the ability to connect with people, no matter how important or famous you may be. And there's nobody greater than Coach Wooden as a coach. And you think about his UCLA days, but yet he was very humble and, you know, was one of those individuals that you could talk to almost anyone. So I think that that's what leadership's all about, the ability to connect with people, to mentor, touch them, and really build that bridge to the future for them, give them a chance to have the vision that they need to better themselves as individuals. I think that's really what makes great leadership.
Why do you think so many people lack that essential part of leadership? Leadership is just so easy to come by. Why do you think so many people lack it, or so many people don't have the drive to be leaders?
Well, I think they're out there. I think a couple things, George. I think the first thing is that too often when you're placed in that role, you start to believe it's always about you. You know, if you think about poor leaders or leaders who struggle or leaders who you may have come in contact with that you're just not very impressed with or have touched you or motivated you. And you if you take an inventory of what those traits were, it'll probably come down to they made it all about them. And how many times did you work for someone or encounter someone who talks about, well, you know, I've got an important job here. I got a lot of responsibility. You don't know what it's like to be the person in charge. Okay, but you signed up to be the leader. So, you know, I mean, so I think one of the mistakes leaders make, and especially newer leaders, is they make it all about themselves. Well, it's not about
using
you.
Using the word I.
Me. Yes, exactly. It's about the team. It's about your people. It's about getting them to develop and grow as individuals. So I think that's probably one of the essential problems that leaders make, is they make it about themselves. I think that's it. And I think the second problem is often is they don't accept responsibilities. They don't hold themselves accountable. And I think that, you know, really good leaders are harder on themselves than anyone else will ever be on them. You know, once you right. Oh, go ahead.
I agree. No, I was going to say, you're right. You're exactly right. Legitimate leaders are harder on themselves, and they don't think of themselves. They think of other people who might be in need of their leadership, you know, and they are free to give it. It's not about, I don't think, like you said, I don't think there should be any leader who should make leadership all about themselves. That's not a leader to me.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And I also think, like, so for example, when I think of words that describe great leaders, it's funny. The word that comes to my mind all the time, or the word I would like to be, you know, used when people talk about Rocky Romanella, would be the word thoughtful. Now, that's not a word that you hear a lot of people talk about when describing a leader. But for me, I think that's a great word, because if people say, boy, George is a thoughtful leader, well, then that would mean that, you know, he's that kind of individual. He's attentive to the needs of his people. He empathizes with their concerns. He serves their best interest. He thinks through the consequences of his decisions. But people think the word thoughtful means, you know, George and Rocky are two soft guys. They'll never hold anybody accountable. You know, they're not tough enough to be a leader. Well, it's actually the opposite. People will follow you because you are a thoughtful leader, because you think through the consequences. So I think that's a word, for example, that doesn't get often used, but I think it's an essential word, and a word that we should all be proud of as leaders. If somebody said, you know, that George, he's a thoughtful leader. You know what? I'd work for a person like George, because he thinks through things. He thinks through the consequences. I think that's important.
Yeah, I do think that is very, very important. So tell us a little bit about your book. Are some of the things you just got through talking about, are they a part of your book? Are they incorporated somehow into what you write?
Yes, absolutely. And thanks for asking. So as I said, the title of the book is Tighten the Lug Nuts, and a little shameless plug here. You can obviously get it online at Amazon or Amazon and download it on Kindle. But I wrote the book in third person. So I never like sitting in a meeting, George, or having conversations with individuals, and they presented something to me and they would say, you know, well, this is what I'd like to do. And I never liked that feeling of saying, well, I would do it differently. So I always used this fictitious person, Joe Scafone. I would say, hey, you know, George, what would Joe do? You think Joe would think that's a good idea? So in writing the book, I never wanted to be a book that was written in the first person. I always wanted to be able to discuss thoughts and concepts and ideas and values with people. So I use Joe Scafone as my main character. So the book is sort of a history of my 40 years in business. A lot of stories. Mm-hmm. I tell a lot of stories. I think that no one likes to get lectured or preached to. So it's some great stories in the book. And the book's written on an airplane. It's Joe Scafone's heading home on his last business trip. And he's sort of thinking through his 40 years, and there's many great stories, but many great business lessons. And in fact, at the end of each chapter, I kind of profile those one or two or three lessons of each chapter so that it's summarized for you. And it's in a way that's very useful as you're sitting there reading and thinking through, you know, how can I improve as a leader, as a person, and can I utilize this in my daily, both life and in my professional life? So I think it's a fun book. At the very least, you'll put the book down with a smile from the many stories. But I think there's some very helpful things in there, both in business and in professional life. And personal
could you
life,
share?
I'm sorry.
Could you share a little bit of it with us if you have it with you?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. So as I said, Joe's flying home on his last business trip, and he meets a wonderful older woman on a plane. And, of course, her name is Nonna. And so Nonna helps him through the book, asking some different questions. And it really takes you through this concept. I have a concept that I use called balanced leadership. And balanced leadership, I believe that in life, you have to be a balanced individual. And too often in business, when you approach a problem or trying to build a solution, you look at it from maybe one or two perspectives. I believe that when making good decisions, and in being in good balance, you make it from three key constituents: your customers, your people, and your stakeholders. And if you make your decisions, I always say, think like a customer, feel like a valued individual, and act like an owner, you make much better decisions. So if you and I were building a new product in our company, and if we took that approach, we'd say, well, who's the customer? What are we trying to solve for? What's the customer needs? What keeps that customer up awake at night? And then we'd make sure that our people were involved so that they have to execute the solution. They're going to have to understand the new product. They're going to have to understand how we're going to distribute that product to our customers. And then I always ask the question at the end, well, if you own this business 100%, if this was your candy store, would you do this? And you would be amazed, George, how often when I ask that question, someone would say to me, well, no, I don't. If this was my business, I wouldn't do it. Well, then why would you want me to do it then? So it's that ownership piece that sometimes you know, taken out. So I think that it doesn't always get, you know, in full view. So I believe, so that's one big part of the book, is this concept of balanced leadership, thinking like a customer, feeling like a valued individual, and acting like an owner. And then I tell some stories about, you know, sales and setting expectations and those kinds of things. So overall, I think there's some really good lessons in there, but more importantly, I think you'll have a lot of those aha moments. Oh, okay, that makes sense. The other thing I think is important in business books is it just you know, I think sometimes, you know, think about some of the best books you've read. At the end of the book, you say, well, I kind of do that. You know, that's nothing really new to me. You know what's important about those two feelings? It validates that you're doing the right thing. Sometimes you wonder, am I doing the right things? Am I going in the right direction? Am I viewing things the right way? And so at the end of a good book, you put it down, especially a business book or a self-help book or something along those lines. You put the book down and you're thinking to yourself, hey, you know what? I do those things. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It sounds like a great book for the new entrepreneur.
I would think so. I think it can be for the new entrepreneur. It's also a good book for a seasoned individual. There's a chapter in there I talk about the 100-day. There's a chapter in there I talk about the 100-day plan. And what I mean by that is, as later on in my career, as I was getting new assignments, I started the practice of before an assignment, sitting down and actually writing down what I tried to accomplish in my first 100 days. And it really kept me focused. And it, of course, with my balanced leadership approach, I made sure that our customers, people, and stakeholders were always represented. And so I would lay out this 100-day plan, because I think what happens is you're so excited about your new responsibility or your new job, you just dive right in. Well, yeah, what experience tells you is, you know what? Don't let your strength be your weakness. Don't let this energy and enthusiasm for the new job become a problem because you run 150 miles an hour right into a wall. Every now and then you can use the door to go through that wall. You know what I mean? So the 100-day plan allows you to kind of organize your thoughts and get a good view of what you're trying to accomplish and kind of keeps you on task, keeps you on plan. It keeps you balanced. So there's some good parts in there for some seasoned individuals as well.
Sound like you had fun writing it.
I really did. Once I got through the scared nervousness of who's going to read this book, and would anybody read a book by Rocky Romanella? But once I got past that, I mean, yes, absolutely. I will tell you that so far, a book's been well received and really selling well, but The thing that I enjoy the most is the notes I get and the letters I get or emails I get back from people who say to me, because the book in many ways, especially the early parts of the book, is really is a tribute to my dad. How many people have written me notes and said to me, hey, you know what? I put the book down and went and talked to my father, had a good conversation with my dad. You know what? That wasn't the intention of the book other than me, you know, kind of thanking my dad in my own way and recognizing him. But the fact that other people have put the book down and had those conversations with their dad really makes me feel really good. So that's a great unintended consequence of the book. I got to tell you, George, it's a great feeling.
I know that would be a great feeling. And the book sounds like it's a great book. It sounds like a wonderful book. Sounds like a book that everybody should be reading. So where would we find the book? Give us a website or Amazon.
Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You can get it on their website. Uh-huh. And then our website is www.360. SIXTY Management Services.com. So 360 Management Services.com. You know, when you build your website, George, these names all sound good. So you got to write them out on the website. Then you're like, I should have came up with a shorter name than 360 Management Services. but it's our holistic approach. We look at things in a 360 vision and a complete kind of cycle of life. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's a long. So it's the number 360 managementservices.com. You can go up on our website. You can buy the book there as well. You can ask me questions. I've gotten quite a few questions from different people saying, hey, I've got this situation going on at work. If I can help, George, if I can help somebody, that just makes me feel good, right? I mean, if somebody reads a book and brings a smile to their face or talks to their dad or brings them closer together, well, then that's what it's all about, right?
That is what it's all about, man. That I have the same sentiment. I think that's great. Anytime you can help somebody, especially if they enjoy what you've written or enjoy what you've inspired them to do, and they give you that positive feedback, that's one of the things that keeps you going, and that's one of the things that will probably make you want to write another book.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, George, let me ask you a quick question. So, you've got a great radio program here in Chicago.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you. Great.
Man, you're a great host. I mean, you asked, you're easy to talk to. You ask some great questions. So how did you start this?
To start the radio show?
How did you start? Yeah.
Being a radio host? Oh, I came by it accidentally. You know what? People used to tell me before I had the radio show that I had a nice voice. I didn't think I had a nice voice. People say, well, you sound a lot younger than you look, you know?
That's good.
And I didn't believe it. I didn't know what to make of it. And then one day I kept hearing it and I kept going on the internet and I would see, well, radio show, get you on radio show. And then I started to think about it. I say, hey, But before I did that, I purchased a musical program, a recording program. I wanted to hear my voice as other people was hearing it because I didn't hear it the way they were hearing it. So I had to record my voice. I recorded it and I heard myself. I said, wow, do I sound like that? That's pretty good. And then basically it encouraged me to. And I had a little funds to go with it. So it encouraged me to try radio hosting, and I've been doing it for almost, I got into it kind of late. I've been doing it almost 3 years.
Oh, wow. You're excellent. You're a natural. So congratulations, boy. You're a great story.
But you know what?
You should, you know, that's great.
Yeah. I try to, I've been invited on other shows, radio shows, but sometimes I turn them down because the reason why I turn a lot of them down because they want money, you know, so I'm not paying to be on your show, you know, and right. They want to give me so much paperwork and I got to go through all of this before I said, hey, I don't need to do that on my show. You just call in. I mean, I don't need to know a lot of things that I don't need to know, you know, and I try to make it. I've had over 300 people on the show, and I've never pre-interviewed anybody. I never pre-interviewed anybody. I never called anybody. The only thing I ask for people to be on the show is their website and, you know, or a blog, and that's it. You know, and,
you know why? I mean, I tell you why. You know, another thing that I think makes people successful is when they have, you know, great intentions. I mean, your intentions are to do good things and to help other people either talk about their book. I mean, so when you start with a good heart, when you start with good intentions, it's amazing how good things come from there. You know, they spring from an honest heart. So you can tell that, you know, you're a man with an honest heart who's got intentions to do good things. And you know what? I think that you're reaping the rewards of your honesty.
But you know what? It's a lot of people out there. I mean, you say I have a good heart, but it's a lot of people out there who's going to try and scam that good. Well, he's a nice person. He's a great person. Let's see if we can do this, you know, because I've had that on. I have that to happen. You know, people think, well, he's caring. He's caring. He's soft. So they'll try to manipulate you in some way. But, you know, I can be just as hard as the next guy. You know, I mean, I know the scams when they come in, you know, so.
Well, yeah, you know, look, unfortunately, there's all kinds. I always say that, you know, when you look at it, there's really three kinds of people. There's the great people who are early adopters, and they're gonna just do good things. Then you got maybe 20% of the people. Then you got 20% of the people that no matter what you do is never going to be happy. Right?
Exactly.
I mean, they're always, you know, their intentions are good. You know, and then you got the 60% in the middle. And if you can get the 20 early adopters and the 60 in the middle to move, you know, in the right direction, you end up with 80% of really good people. You know, think about the soccer field on a Saturday. You got the parents who are going to buy the juice boxes. Then you got the parents who say, well, do you want to buy the juice boxes? And then you got the other parents who are like, I ain't buying no juice boxes. I'm just dropping my kid off. You're babysitting my kid for me, right? So in all walks of life, you're right, George. There's those kinds of individuals. Yeah. But when you really think about it, though, if as a leader or a person, you know, with your responsibilities and the things that you do, if you do it with an honest heart, it's amazing. You're gonna connect with good people. You're gonna do good things, and you're gonna have some good success. I really do believe that.
And I would probably say that not just for me, but just about anybody in general with those kinds of intentions. You're going to if you do good work, you're going to get good work. It's going to come back at you. All right. Author Rocco Romanelli on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Would you like a link of the show? You can put it on your website. You know, I can send that to you later if you want.
Yeah, that would be outstanding. And if your guests would like to ask any questions at another time or anything that would help you with your guests, I would be honored to do anything that would be helpful for your guests as well.
No problem. Thanks for being on the show. And I'll get that link to you as soon as the show is processed.
All right. Thanks a lot, George. Be safe and have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, that was Rocco Romanelli on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And wasn't that inspiring and inspiration? I love it when people try to turn the interview back around at me because, it's a story there. Like he said, there is a story there. We will be right back, folks. Hey!
fellow Friends of Women of Massachusetts. Yeah. I love you too. I am glad to have this chance to stand shoulder to shoulder to fight alongside the mayor of Boston for the people of this country. Thank you. So, we're here today because of the power of women. The power of women to come up with good ideas like this rally. The power of women to organize like this rally. And the power of women to make sure that as our country enters a new political era, that the voices of the people will be heard. Yesterday, Donald Trump was sworn in as president. Sight is now burned into my eyes forever. And I hope the same is true for you, because we will not forget. We do not want to forget. We will use that vision to make sure that we fight harder, we fight tougher, and we fight more passionately for than ever, not just for the people whom Donald Trump supports, but for all of America. People are worried. Donald Trump's campaign was about attacks on women, attacks on African Americans, attacks on Latinos, attacks on religious groups, attacks on immigrants. A Trump-Pence Supreme Court could overturn Roe versus Wade and dissolve marriages of LGBTQ citizens. A Republican Congress is eager to rip away health care from millions of Americans. America's hardworking families have taken one punch after another. Decades of trickle-down economics and attacks on unions, attacks on wages, attacks on pensions, attacks on health care, attacks on Social Security, attacks on education, attacks on infrastructure and financial regulation have gutted America's middle class. A broken criminal justice system, a broken voting rights system, and decades of systematic racism have kept people of color from having the same opportunities as other Americans throughout this country. The fact is that the playing field has been tilted badly in favor of those at the top for a generation now. And now, President Trump and the Republican Congress are ready to ram through laws that will tilt it even harder. Now, we can whimper, we can whine, or we can fight back. Me, I'm here to fight back. I'm here to fight back. And that is why we come together today. Hundreds of thousands of people in Boston, in Washington, and across this country, we are in marches to say we are fighting back. That's who we are. We come here to stand shoulder to shoulder, to make clear we are here, we will not be silent. We will not play dead. We will fight for what we believe in.
Yeah!
You bet. We have a vision, and that vision defines who we are as a people. First, we fight for basic dignity and respect for every human being, period. No compromise, no backing up. And second, we fight for economic opportunity, not just for those at the top, but for everyone. All of our kids deserve a fighting chance to get ahead. Respect for everyone, economic opportunity for everyone. That is the American deal, and that's what we fight for. You know, those core principles call out the best in who we are. For too long, American families have seen a government and an economy that isn't working for them. And Trump and the Republicans promised to make America worse. But we're here because we are ready to fight for the people who want to build a country that works for all of us. That's why we're here. We come together to give each other strength. We come together to give each other courage. We come together to remind each other of our values. As we get ready to march, let us remind each other what we believe in and why we fight and why we will keep right on fighting. We believe that no one in this country should work full time and live in poverty. And that means raising the minimum wage. Yes, it does. Paid overtime, sick leave, we will fight for it. We believe that workers have a right to come together and to bargain together. Unions built America's middle class, and unions will rebuild America's middle class. We believe that every young person is entitled to get an education without getting crushed by student loan debt. We believe in debt-free college. Now, I'm going to say something that is really controversial in some places in Washington. We believe in science. Change is real, and we have a moral responsibility to protect this earth for our children and our grandchildren. We also believe that immigration makes us a stronger country. We will not build a stupid wall. Believe that sexism, racism, homophobia, and bigotry have no place in this country. Black lives matter. Diversity makes our country stronger. We believe that equal means equal. And that's true in marriage. It's true every place. We will never stop fighting to ensure equality for all of our citizens. You know, I could do this all day. One more that I cannot believe I have to do in 2017. We believe in equal pay for equal work and a woman's right to decisions over her own body.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Yes!
All right, that was Elizabeth Warren. Her speech, one of her magnificent speech during the Women's March, that was maybe a month or so ago. but it was so memorable. It was a march against Trump. And speaking of women's rights in general are deteriorating in this country and around the world. There is no doubt about it. Women's rights are deteriorating. And women, in my estimation, is the most powerful force within the United States, maybe even the world. But women are being disrespected. They're being abused. I mean, women's rights are deteriorating as I speak. Even in the United States, we know in certain countries, women can't even drive. They can't even walk down the street. I mean, fidelity is really a criteria for some of these countries to, you know, really punish women. And women I think women are the backbone of America, not the men. The men, I don't know what's wrong with the damn men, but anyway, women are the backbone of everything in America. You walk in a school, any school, public school, private school, the majority of the people who are in those schools teaching those children are women. Women, you walk into some of these companies, especially some of the corporations around the United States, around the world, women are in charge. I mean, you walk into all these stores, women are in charge. You know, you walk into some of these small companies, out of the way companies you never heard of, but they're producing and manufacturing something that we need. They have been headed up by women. I mean, during my lifetime, I think I've had about 3 or 4 women bosses. And I tell you something, I think I'd rather work for a woman than a man. You know, yeah, I mean, I've had 3 or 4 great women bosses. Some of the men bosses that I've had a lot of complaints, you know, a lot of complaints. And there are jobs I had gone to, and there are jobs I had sought out. And I went to the interview, and a guy was interviewing me. I said, if a guy is interviewing me, then I know I don't have the job. But then I go to interviews being interviewed by a woman, bingo, I have the job. But that's not the reason why I think women are unique in the country. Because I, you know, that just happened to me. I can't speak for other people. Okay, so, but women are being, I mean, it's just phenomenal. And some women, they don't even know this. They don't even know that they're becoming second, third, and fourth class citizens in the United States and around the world. Equal pay for equal days pay, or equal pay along there with the man for doing the same kind of work. I don't think that's going to happen. Ever. It may happen in some circles, but for it to become a law in Congress, I don't think that's going to happen. Of course, there's a lot of women out here who make more money than any man, period. A lot of them, women probably make the most money, but when it comes to corporate America, women are way behind the eight ball on that one, the eight ball. Okay, if you play pool, you know what I'm talking about. But, It's a serious charge, folks. And I'm going to have someone on the show tomorrow, maybe to talk about that if I don't have a clip to play. But women are, no doubt about it, becoming or have been second-class citizens. I know in some countries around the world, especially some of the Muslim countries, women are, they're not even allowed to do a hell of a lot of things. And they get punished, stoned, bricked, killed. You know, and in the United States, we have so much domestic violence, women getting beaten, and they get thrown into sex trafficking by someone who they thought they loved, and into these, and it's a shame that some women, young women, they have their whole lives ahead of them. They have their whole careers ahead of them. They know where they want to be. They know where they want to go. They know what they want to become. They have their careers all mapped out. Some of these young ladies, suddenly they run into the wrong guy. And all of that just goes up in smoke. You run into the wrong guy. You know, he turns out to be a dirtbag thug. He starts to drug you, And then after the drugging, he gains control over you and he puts you out on the street to sell your body. And the career, that great career, has gone straight down the drain. And so much of that happens to some of these young girls out here. Promising careers, smart, intelligent, bright. The future is bright ahead. Then they run into the wrong guy. And all of that is just shot to hell. Everything is, I've seen it too many times. I'm not just talking about it. I'm talking about what I've witnessed. And it's just sad. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote these two stories about Maxine Monroe. It's pretty tough. It's graphic. It's violent, but it's what's going on in America today against women. You know, against women. You got some women out here who are bragging, you know, it's not happening to me. I mean, I'm all right, you know, my man, you know, all that kind of crap. But there are so many women out here who are victims of some guy. You know, victims of some guy who isn't about anything. I've talked about this on the show earlier, that and women are second-class citizens, or they're becoming second-class citizens because the Trump administration don't give a damn for women. You know, I mean, he doesn't. I don't care how many women he appoints to his cabinet because, I mean, a lot of these women that are in government, they are against women also. And that was the kicker for me when I find other women in high places, you know, saying awful things about women in general. Women kicking women. Women disrespecting women. Got women who think that women should be second, third, or fourth class citizens. There's a real big problem. So, yeah, I'm going to say it. I think women are losing it. And one of the reasons is we've got this fascist in the White House, Donald Trump, who cares nothing about women's rights, women's feelings, or anything. And you got Republicans who are trying to tell women what they should be doing with their bodies. That's ridiculous. You know, so we're going to be talking more about that in the shows to come, because it's happening. And like I've said before, this show is all about making the world a better place. And that's, we're going to do it until the last of my days, because that's what I'm here about, making the world a better place. You just heard Rocco Romanella on the show, and you just Mary Shores. You've heard Lisa Cherry Beaumont. All of these guests that appeared on my show, they're just so animated, lively, and perky, and funny, and at the same time, they wanting to motivate and encourage people to be the best that they can be, generally speaking. And that's what it's all about. I mean, if you can motivate just one person to be the best person that he or she can be, hey, wow, that's making the world a better place. We have a long way to go, because I do think that with the Trump administration, that we've been taken back. Yeah, I think we've been taken back. But realize something. Try to imagine if Hillary Clinton would have won the presidency. Wow, women would be, they would be taking over the world right now, you know, if she had won. I cannot foresee a woman ever running for president of the United States in my lifetime again. I can't see it. However, I do know of some great women who could, if they wanted to run, they might be able to win. On my list is Elizabeth Warren. On my list is Oprah Winfrey. On my list is Michelle Obama. I think if any one of these women ran, they would win. But as for now, they're saying that they're not interested. I don't think that Michelle Obama would run again. I would run for president of the United States. I don't think she wants it. I think she thinks it's too tough. It's rugged. It's tough. It's slinging mud on each other. I don't think she wants that because she is a type to want to stay above the fray. I think Elizabeth Warren would get down in the mud and the gutter with them. You know, I do think that because she is one of my favorites of all. As for Oprah Winfrey, she had thought about it. She thought about it. And then I believe she said that she wasn't going to run. But hey, she just might. I mean, it's too early in the game to think about running for president of the United States. This is probably what she was trying to say. A year or two from now, you know, she may give it a run for her money. And I think if Oprah runs, she could win. She could win. After all, she gave us Barack Obama. And I do think that she could win. If she's running up against a Republican, that Republican may be Donald Trump if he's not impeached before then. And she will wipe the floor with this guy, even with the electoral vote. As for Hillary Clinton, I don't believe she's going to run again as president around 2020. I don't think she's going to do that, but I'm not going to count her out. I mean, she'll be in her 70s, no doubt. She'll be probably the same age as Bernie Sanders is now. She'll maybe be 74, 75 years old, but she can still run, you know, if she wants to. But I do think that Oprah Winfrey is a good prospect. Of course, she's not going to run now. She's not going to say now. She might be exploring it, you know. But I think anybody who runs up against Trump in 2020, I think if a snail run up against Trump, he's going to get trounced, you know, and rightly so. And yeah, we just can't wait to get these people out of those agencies that he appointed, all these awful people. And every one of these people Trump has appointed to some of these cabinet posts are billionaires who are hired to cut programs for the poor and to make life really hard for the middle class. That's all these people were hired to do. That's why they were appointed to these posts, and to lie as much as Trump lies. I think Trump walks around and, hey, make sure you tell a lie, all right? Because that's all Trump know how to do is lie. He know all about lawsuits, though. He know about law. He's had plenty of them. This guy is a mess. But anyway, Oprah Winfrey will be a great president. You know, she doesn't know much about it. She doesn't know much about being president. She doesn't know some of the operations. She doesn't know too much about government. But hell, Trump doesn't either. He didn't either. He's still learning on the job. Trump is going to be learning on the job for the remaining of his term. He's going to be learning on the job. So if he can learn on the job, Oprah can learn on the job too. She can learn on the job too. And I do hope she runs. I would love to see another African-American run for the office of President of the United States and beat Donald Trump. You know, because Donald Trump, a lot of people are calling him a dictator. He acts like a dictator. A lot of people are comparing him to Hitler. And some of that may have some credence because this guy is wild. And I'm hoping that Barack Obama grows some balls and sue this guy for slandering him and dragging his name in the mud, saying that he wiretapped Trump Tower, which is bogus, which is totally untrue, because these guys cannot submit any evidence or proof to that fact. I mean, if I was Obama, I would have sued this guy. A Trump Tower would belong to me right now if I was in Obama's place. But Obama, he's above the fray. He doesn't have the nerve or the gall or the balls to do that. So don't even expect it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We got about 8 more minutes into the show. Oh, wow. When you're having fun, 347-857-1762. When you're having fun, time just goes so fast when you're having fun. And we are having fun. All righty. What do we have here? Dolly Parton's manager dies. He was 87 years old. Wow. Yeah. All right. Prerequisite for key post, loyalty, not experience. Oh, okay. That's the Trump administration. They want loyalty, not experience. I mean, when something screw up, something, if somebody's lying or telling a fib or don't know what they're doing, the Trump administration says, hey, that's okay. As long as you kiss my ass, that's okay. And that's what it's all about. It doesn't matter if they know what they're doing. As long as they kiss enough of Trump's ass, they're going to have a job. This is saying it right here on MSNBC. Prerequisite for key posts in the Trump administration, loyalty, not experienced. That's a damn shame. Now, can you or I go out and get a job being loyal? No. That employer is going to want you to have some experience so you'll know what you're doing so that you will not ruin his workplace and get him in trouble where he might one day get sued. Because you have no experience, but you're loyal. That is so crazy. This is the Trump administration. They are a bunch of loonies. We all know that. Okay. All right, let's go up here. All righty. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And as I was telling Rocco, I got into this because people kept telling me I had a nice voice. And I mean, I would talk on the phone with some people and they would say, well, George, you have a nice voice. I said, oh. And when some people tell you these kind of things for so many times, you got to try and experience it. So I recorded my voice and I said, well, it sounds pretty good. But to be a radio host, you have to have more than just a nice voice. You have to have talent for it. You have to want to do it. And you have to remain in there until success actually comes. So you can't really, you know, say that it was your voice and only your voice. You have to have talent. You have to really have talent and know what you're doing. You got to think outside of the box to be a successful radio show host, even on the internet, because it is totally hard to be successful as an internet radio television host, because there's a million people out here doing the same things you and I are doing.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help us all. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl. Heaven help us all.
what I said. All right, folks, thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I hope you join me tomorrow. I got a bombshell here, folks. Rachel Maddow has Trump's tax return. Yeah, I hope it's not fake news, but, you know, we're going to check it out. Rachel Maddow just says she has Donald Trump's tax forms. So join me tomorrow, folks. We can talk about it. I'm going to look at it a little bit more. So I'm going to say... It is exciting. All right, bye-bye, everybody. See you tomorrow, all right? George Wilder Jr.